There are low labor requirements in this business, which means I can afford to pay and it will not sink me. Not even close. Not even close. And me offering an extra dollar, $2, $3, $4 per hour, that's nothing to me compared to what it is to the individuals making it. That's huge to them relative to what it means to me. So I had an incredible pool of I had no problem finding talent.
So the big question is this: how do you elevate the status of the skilled trades today so the next generation of workers will be able to close the talent gap tomorrow? That's the question, and this podcast is on a mission to find the answers. Welcome to Inside the Trades. We're your mission guides, Matt Consigli and Derek Cameron. Welcome back to another episode of Inside the Trades. Your host here, Derek Cameron, and joining me as always is the best hair in podcasting and soon to be something else, and I won't step on it, Matt Consigli. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, Derek. How are you?
I'm doing well. We should title this one a very special episode of Inside the Trades.
It is. Because it is. It's different.
It's a little bit of a departure from our regular programming, and that's exciting because somebody has put their money where their mouth is and has fully embraced going into the trades. And I will leave it at that. And can you give us maybe a little bit of a teaser on this one, Matt?
Sure. I don't know if it's a teaser, if it's the whole thing. I bought a company. We've talked a lot about how more and more people need to get into the trades and, you know, grow it and nurture it and kind of show that there is status behind it. Well, I bought a company to
do, you went full on Victor Kiam.
To do exactly that. And you know, there's a lot behind it, and we can kind of talk through motivations and intent and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I was kind of in a place mentally where outside of the show, you know, we had Foundry, which is a company that I had founded and was trying to start from scratch, which was intended to work with business owners who are in the trades, almost like a consultant or an advisor, to say, here are the business skills needed to grow the business side of things. You know, you all have a great trade, you have a craft, you're out in the field, you're great with customers, you're great with your hands, whatever it is, but marketing is different, finance, operations, legal, that's all different. That's a skill set that not everyone may have. I do have it. And so I was trying to share the knowledge. It was very frustrating for me being a consultant. It's got nothing to do with the people I was working with. Being a consultant is very frustrating. Not having ownership over the final outcome is very frustrating to me. And, you know, several months ago, I was just kind of playing around with the idea of, don't you just want to do this yourself? Like, you have the ideas, you have the thoughts, you have the energy, the motivation, like, just do it yourself. And that sent me down a rabbit hole of how do you actually make that happen? You know, I'm not a trade expert. So how do I blend the two? How do I blend the business expertise that I think I can bring to the table while lacking the trade expertise? How do you figure out a way to bridge that gap and actually make this happen? And
so what was the research process on this one? Because, and we'll obviously disclose what you bought, but how did you come to the whole, like, where'd you start with the whole research process?
Well, there are two pieces to that. There was, how do you buy a company? And then what kind of company are you going to get? And that, you know, they went in that order. So first, how do you buy a company? You know, that was something I never took it seriously for years. For years, people had been saying to me, don't start your own company and go buy one. Like, you could go buy one. We know other people that have bought them and they've been very successful. And I was just kind of like, yeah, sure. I never really took it to heart. I never took it seriously. Honestly, I didn't think I had the money to do it. And then I started looking into it more and more and discovered this is feasible. You know, this is something that the common man, so to speak, can do. You don't need to be a millionaire to buy a company. It's actually quite similar to buying a house. You make a cash down payment, nominal down payment, and the rest is financed by a bank, by an investor, there's a thing called seller financing where the person selling the business actually fronts the money for it. You basically pay them what you owe them over time with the cash flows from the business that you've taken from them. So as far as your own money, you need far less of it than you think to be able to buy a company. So I said, okay, you can do this. Like you have the finances, you have the knowledge to be able to do this. What kind of company are you going to get? And that started out very, very broadly. And I learned quickly that you're going to have to narrow down the search focus. And again, we can kind of go through that in detail, but
yeah, we could probably stretch this one out over multiple episodes, but what was the winnowing process that helped you come to your ultimate decision?
So for me, it was less about the product or the service, and it was more about characteristics of the business. So what I mean by that, I had four or five rules that I knew I needed to see. And keep in mind, like, I'm a finance person by trade, right? You know, I worked at a bank, I worked at insurance companies, like, I think in numbers. So there were certain, you know, financial measures that I knew I needed to see in a business, or certain like strategic levers that I needed to see in the bank. I knew that it needed to be what I call a systems dependent business versus an expertise dependent business, right? So being a consultant prior, that's an expertise based business. Like, everything revolves around what's inside my brain, my expertise. Someone new can't come in and take it over and do it in the same way.
Yeah, that's, so you can't replicate or scale that.
Exactly. That's a bad business to buy. I knew there needed to be something that was just a repeatable system, a repeatable process over and over and over. Anyone could come in and learn it, including myself. So that was one of the very first rules. And, you know, staying relevant to the trades, that cut out a lot of trades for me. Like, that cut out electricians and plumbing and HVAC and things like that, which maybe it was, you know, an intimidation factor for me, but I didn't know anything about it. So it's like, I would love to get into that, but I don't know enough about it. The second rule I had, it needed low labor requirements, both in terms of the number of people required to make this thing run, but also going back to rule one, like, this can't be expertise dependent. I need to be able to teach people. I need to be able to coach them. I wanted it focused, you know, reasonably close to essential services, meaning that it's not, maybe not recession proof, but it was going to be recession resistant. You know, I didn't want a home remodeling company. I didn't want a construction company. That's not essential. That's a luxury. Some other, you know, financial measures there needed. I needed to see low capital requirements, you know, low CapEx, low investment requirements in equipment and infrastructure and things like that. And then I paid very close attention to the margins, and I wanted to see very high gross margins, you know, which meaning, I'm using financial lingo, but basically meaning there are low costs required to deliver or fulfill your service. And then I also needed to see high net margins. So after everything's paid off, you know, the dollars that go into your pocket at the end of the day, I needed to see a high net margin of at least 25 or 30% or more. So
And just for a comparison's sake, too, I mean, what does a restaurant look like, look at?
Single digits.
Okay.
Mid to high single digits. Restaurants are very tough. You know, so again, that I looked at a lot of different things. I looked at, I bought a mosquito and tick control company. But I looked at a school bus company, you know, like driving kids to school in the morning.
You're going to be Matt the bus driver?
I've got very close to buying a school bus company. I was looking at pet grooming companies. I did look at a couple plumbing companies because I do think they're great businesses and I have to learn it somehow. I looked at so many different things under the sun and I had those rules. I had those five rules and I just had to stay disciplined and focused and say which one is the closest to adhering to these. And we ended up spraying bugs.
Well, I mean, I think everyone that is listening and has been privy to the way our winters have been over the last few years and how they've been mild to somewhat non-existent, the proliferation of bugs at this point is pretty massive. So these companies are certainly in high demand. I know that it is a staple in our household to get our yard addressed early in the season. So it certainly makes sense that it would be a good business to buy into and or a good business to buy, I should say. And taking a step back on this one, I mean, you're talking about you had five principles, you had four sort of rules you went by to do that. I think for anybody listening to this, I mean, we wanted to tee this one up because it was something that, I mean, obviously you and I have talked about this offline for a long time. I mean, I'm going down the road. I mean, I own my own business, but I'm also looking at purchasing something else too. And there's just, how do you go through it? What's the due diligence that you need to do? So anybody that's out there that's looking to make some sort of change in their life or to figure out a way that they can align themselves with the trades or enter the trades without necessarily being on the tools for years. I mean, the purchase part of this is something that is very much a feasible thing to do and a realistic thing to do. So we wanted to bring this into the show because it's one, I mean, putting our money where our mouth is, or Matt's putting his money where his mouth is. And the other part is actually just breaking the whole process down into understandable chunks in how this all comes to be. And we're going to have this as a running segment into the show because there's, I mean, just you've been the mosquito authority for what? How long have you had the keys to the business?
A month, maybe.
And how's that experience been over the last month?
It's fresh. There are some very high highs and there are some very low lows. The highs are like career defining best moments that I've had in my professional life to date. And you live for those, like that, those get you up in the morning. The lows are the lowest professional points.
Could you give us a little glimpse as to what some of those lows could be?
It's almost exclusively related to customer service. I'm not, you know, this is the first like true stereotypical customer service role that I've had.
You weren't flipping burgers or had a paper back in the day? What gives, man?
No. Well, I guess I worked at a golf course and like took the bag and put it on the cart, but you know that I don't count that. Like I spent most of my time picking balls off the range and refilling water jugs around the course, but not like truly, you know, person to person.
Yeah,
like I have to sell to you, resolve your conflict, whatever it is. Like there is no intermediary, there's no barrier between us whatsoever. This is the first job I've had like that. I don't have the temperament for it.
Well, given that you own the business that this critical part of the operation is part of, what are you doing to try to ameliorate mitigate some of those?
So I should qualify this a little bit. Like I like working with people. I like getting to know people, understanding them, like understanding their need, you know, their personal needs or for their home or for their family, whatever. I'm not intimidated by selling. I'm not intimidated by talking, you know, talking price. It's when there's a partnership in our dialogue, you know, owner and customer, and there's a curiosity between us and lots of questions and information flowing back and forth. I love that. It's when there's a certain portion of this clientele within the business that I acquired that I think assume ill intent from you. Like they assume you're trying to scam them. They assume you're a bad person. They assume you're a liar. They judge you instantly and meet you with anger and contempt. And that's where I don't have the patience for that. Like, mm-hmm. You don't know anything about me. You don't know why I bought this. You don't know how strongly I feel about the service. Like, this is a service that literally saves lives. There are people who get severely sick from mosquitoes, from ticks. There are people that die from it. Like, it, I consider this an important service. And for you to judge me in that way, I have a serious issue with that. Or there's also a crowd of people, and I'm just going to say it. They live in La La Land. Like, I can't
expand on that.
It's like if you're sitting at a table and you're trying to explain to someone 2 + 2 = 4, and they're like, no, it doesn't. Excuse me? 2 + 2 = 4. No, it doesn't. Like, what do I do with that? What do I do with that? That's what I don't have the temperament for. And there are more of those customers in the pool than I thought coming in. And that's probably my top priority, my top initiative right now is we got to person by person work through the customer base and figure out who's going to be a good, loyal, long-term customer and who's probably someone that we're going to let go.
So you're trying to look at the fit piece of that from the other side, because you know, as a customer, you're always looking to be like, what's a good fit for a provider for me? And what are they able to provide for me for the cost that I'm going to lay out? Where's the flip side in this one? Because you're looking at your customer base and saying, who's a good fit for the Mosquito Authority?
That's right.
And how can we work together? And because you're bringing a lot of very earnest values and a lot of very earnest ambitions into this. The health component probably being the biggest one of this, and also trying to be able to run a trades related service business as you believe it should be, and why we wanted to enter into this whole field to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and yeah. To be fair, these people don't know me the way that you know me. You know that I'm a very character and values driven person, and. But here's the issue. I don't expect them to know that about me. But I would assume, this is where my assumption has been wrong. I would assume going in that there would at least be a platform of communication, that there would be an opportunity to share who I am, what I do, why we do it, why we want to help you, like why we want you as a customer, why we value your business. And for a lot of people, that platform's not just, it's just not there for a lot of people. Again, it's this assumed intention of ill intent. And as a result, you're shut off. Like, no response to that. I've over communicated, right? The transition in ownership. I got a lot of advice from a lot of people saying, don't even announce that there's a change in ownership. You're going to confuse people. Like, I heard that from many, many folks who have been in a similar boat, who have done this in the past. Said, don't even announce change in ownership. Just show up. You're going to confuse them. They're just going to make them ask questions that you're not going to want to answer. And I was like, no, that's the wrong way to do it. That might be the easy way to do it. That's the wrong way to do it. There, right there, there's an example of that's a value that I believe in. There's a right way to doing business, and they have to be informed. And we've over-communicated through emails from the prior owners, emails from me, phone calls, voicemails, text messages. Like, each individual customer, I would say in a month, have received at least half a dozen unique communications through all modes of communication. And I'm astounded by the number of people who are like, I've heard nothing from you. It's like, no, you have, you are just ignoring it. Like, you're just ignoring it. And then responding with anger at your perception of not hearing anything from me. Like, what do I do in that situation? You put yourself in my shoes. I've communicated to you 6 times and I'm being told that I haven't. How do you expect me to react?
And arguing with them about it is a fruitless and pointless
gesture. Yeah, that's a waste. That's a waste of time.
Yeah, no matter what, you're also setting the start of the relationship off on the wrong foot, because it's turning contentious from the get-go.
That's the hard part. That's my weakness. That's the thing that over time, like, I have to build my support and resources around me to handle that, because that I'm not going to engage, which is obviously something that the owner needs to do. But there are many, many other things that I love doing and get like great fulfillment out of.
So you close the deal within the last month, and then you went from zero to the Mosquito Authority, and you started the communication process both from the previous owner and then yourself rolling that out. What was the next step that you had to do to start this whole process? Because you don't have a background in pest control or mosquito tick eradication.
And so you're talking the process of operating the business, not of acquiring.
Yeah, if you want to touch on that, because we want to turn this into a running segment in the show, because I think each of these discrete elements requires a show to itself. But just teeing it up for down the road on what are the things that you're trying to address as you inherit a business and try to tackle no fewer than 1,000 different priorities.
Yeah, so obviously you need your team.
How big is your team?
It's 2 people. It's tiny. This is a small business. That was actually the first thing that I started working on. Like, I knew that I needed a team. I knew that I needed to hire. I was going to have to train them, which means I had to get myself trained first so that I would be capable of training them. That's actually where I started.
You went to Mosquito U?
Yeah, actually, yes. Like, literally, yes. And I've learned more about bugs in the last month than I ever thought I would in a lifetime. But, you know, you post a job, you screen a lot of candidates, you interview a lot of candidates, you kind of set your criteria again for what you're looking for, the type of people that you want representing you. And it's not like, how good are you with a backpack blower? You know, it's, what are your customer service skills? How courteous are you? How friendly are you? How comfortable are you in front of other people? Are you on time? Are you disciplined? You know, things like that. Yeah. Are you a naturally curious person? Are you responsible? So interviewed a ton of people, found 2 really, really good ones, like very, very pleased.
How are you able to find that? Because, I mean, what's the thing that we have heard from literally everybody that we've encountered on the show? It's impossible to find
good help. It's impossible to find good help. I pay a lot. I would bet I am confident that I'm the highest paying pest control company in the market.
Right. So you just threw money. I shouldn't say you threw money at the problem, but you are compensating much more competitively than anybody else is, so you're able to be more scrutinous.
Yeah, and I mean, look, here's the thing. And this is where I consider myself incredibly fortunate to be good at finance. I broke down all of the numbers and I figured out what's the contribution of labor to the expense model versus fuel, water, chemical, marketing, whatever. Labor is the largest expense in the business. Mm-hmm. But relative to some other businesses, like, let's go back to basic principles. Low labor requirements. There are low labor requirements in this business, which means I can afford to pay and it will not sink me. Not even close. Not even close. And me offering an extra dollar, $2, $3, $4 per hour, that's nothing to me compared to what it is to the individuals making it. That's huge to them relative to what it means to me. So I had an incredible pool of, I had no problem finding talent.
Now, when you were posting for the openings, did you lead with the compensation?
Oh yeah.
On that? Okay.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then you have to whittle down and say, you know, I don't want you to just be a person motivated by money. It's okay to be motivated by money. I am. Everybody is.
Sure.
But I'm going to screen you hard to make sure that you're not just motivated by money. And I talked to a ton of candidates and I talked to probably 80 people and picked two. But the benefit was I got 80 at the flip of a switch.
Yeah.
Because of the big flashing neon sign saying pay, 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 pay. Like I knew the flow was going to come in and then it was just on me to, you know, commit the time to vetting them. I mean, you cannot, good talent knows that they're good. And they know that they're going to have their pick of the litter when it comes to job opportunities. So if you're not willing to pay top dollar, then you're not going to have top talent.
It sort of runs counter though to what the general consensus has been, or just kind of the way that we've seen things operate, where it's you're part of the operation and we have to keep the bottom line where it's at in order to be able to stay profitable. But we're again running into a place where you're not able to find good talent. And we've heard that from everybody. So you just went the other way. You just zagged and you just said, I'm going to pay for this. And but you didn't do it irresponsibly. You actually did all the due diligence behind that and ran the numbers on this one. And I guess before we lose everybody to, well, you have to be a finance person in order to buy a company. That's not true. I'm not a finance person. You just need to be able to flex some muscles and be willing to learn and actually find where to get the right information. Hopefully this podcast can be one of those places.
Yeah, you need to be willing to zag. I love zagging, but it's not zagging for the point of zagging. It's you need to find some kind of edge, you know? Like there's no difference between me and any other mosquito company. And I don't care if my customers are listening to this. We use the same equipment. We use the same chemicals. We follow the same process. There's no difference. Which means the only difference is the people. The only difference is the people who are in your yard knocking on your door. Are they lazy or are they committed? Are they going to walk every inch of your yard? Are they going to do half of it and try to get away with it? You know, that is the most important part of this company and lots of companies. And so I knew immediately if I was going to zag somewhere, you have to zag there. It was not a difficult decision for me. And you're right. You don't need to be a finance expert to know that.
So what are the principles that you're founding? Like what are the principles that the company is being built around?
The principles that the company's being built around, I want this company. And this is going to tie back to my frustrations when I get frustrated, because I think if more customers knew this, they would change their view of me. Like I want, and I've said this to the team, I want this to be equivalent of like if your best friend was going to show up and service your home, or if you were going to your mom's house, or if you were going to your grandmother's house. It's like, I have a problem at my house. I need to be fixed. You're the person to do it. I want to be an extension of that family. Like, that's the commitment that I expect when someone shows up in that yard. And it's not just, I'm here, I'm going to do this as rapidly as possible and get out of here to go do the next 10 houses. No, it's, I'm going to knock on the door. I'm going to say hello. I'm going to see how you're doing today. I'm going to see if you're having a good day. I'm going to walk your property. I'm going to point out things that have nothing to do with me, but I think you might want to know. Like, hey, I think your gutters are clogged. Or, hey, I'm seeing some rot at the edge of your foundation. Or I noticed that your garbage barrels are empty sitting in the middle of the road. Let me walk those up to the driveway for you. Like, that's something that your good friend upon coming to your house would do for you out of like, just because. Those are the principles. Like, this is a community-based small business, and I want it to be a part of the community. Like, I want it to contribute to the community. And that's why, like, that's my frustrations, where when you've judged me and assumed that I'm just here to scam you, I take that to heart.
So anybody out there in southeastern Massachusetts that's looking for mosquito and pest control solutions, Mosquito Authority is your place to go.
I hope so. And if you pick us, it's for the people, because again, my spray is the same as everybody else's.
But you're bringing the love to the game.
I'm bringing the love.
Well, we got a lot of ground to cover on this one, and I'm excited to be able to weave this into the show again, because two of us coming from the non-trades backgrounds, we can only go so far in being able to establish legitimacy in this one. Yes, we care. Yes, we're very inquisitive. And yes, we want to make a difference. But I think having some of the bona fides that you're actually walking the walk is something that goes a long way in being able to establish the credibility here. So that's great to hear that you made the plunge. I mean, we've talked about this one for a while, and it looks like Cody Sanchez finally broke through and it worked out. So we'll be looking forward to more of the stories along the way and how you're doing with the operation and being able to extract more pearls of wisdom too from your experiences here. So thanks for sharing your initial foray into the world of business ownership as a trades business, and looking forward to hearing what you got going along the way.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a roller coaster ride, but that's what life's all about, right? So I'm looking forward to sharing a lot more.
And the folks that are listening here too, let us know what you want to hear on this one, because we can go a lot of different ways on this. And it's important to us to make sure that we're covering the right ground on what's important to you. So let us know through show feedback, emails. We're pretty much everywhere you can hear us on social media. So let us know when you hear this, what you liked about this and what you want to hear and what you want to know about too, because we can file that away and make sure we can weave that into the show too. All right. Well, Matt the Mosquito Guy, which, you know, we at least can stumble into a show sponsor now. And
exactly.
Joint operation between 3805 Productions and the Mosquito Authority, best hair in pest control. All right, this wraps up another one. As always, this is Derek Cameron and
Matt Consigli.
All right, we'll see you out there soon, folks. Take it easy.
Take care, everyone.